Robert, glad to have you with us again. It's been a long time since we shared.
Years, Sean, yeah. Years.
And Robert and I, I've got to explain to you, we never even got a chance to talk about it. Sitting in between Robert and I is an empty container, which now is made out of biodegradable cardboard, a plastic Pepsi bottle, and a plastic cup with plastic straws in. And with the conversation with Gary Griggs, I went to one of our waste baskets and found those three items sitting right on top. So it's a mess wherever you go with it.
Not to mention two flyers, which I can will direct your attention to.
Oh, okay. We'll jump right to those. And anyway, Robert and I had the honor of winning first place in the most annoying people in Santa Cruz.
Way back when.
Yeah, about 15, 20 years ago, and we've been working at it ever since.
You don't do that award anymore, I don't think.
I think we just closed it out.
Well, we were the champions.
We were the champions. So you have dedicated a good portion of your life to working with homeless people in the homeless situation. What you're doing now is in the forefront of what everybody is thinking about because the problem has gotten way out of control. What if any, solutions have you ever come up with or have you come up with?
Well, for me, the problem is not really the homeless. It's the problem of the repressive behavior of police and other authorities who don't want to see visible poverty. Poverty is the problem. Lack of housing is the problem. An attempt to essentially marginalize really longtime residents who no longer have the income to stay here, many of them, and turn them into pariahs. Initially, it was business nuisances. It was bums because they don't have the proper work ethic. It was, drug-taking hippies, by the which they meant marijuana-smoking hippies. We're talking about the 70s and 80s. And then it became more, the rhetoric changed, although I think the behavior of people did not substantially change, although, of course, now a lot more hard drug use. But the notion of the homeless as now a criminal element, even though the crimes that people like Councilmember David Chirazes, the Santa Cruz City Council Vice Mayor, cite, and the police department cite, are crimes like sleeping outside after 11 o'clock at night, being in a park after dark, smoking, which admittedly in a kind of high fire danger can be a problem, but we're not talking about smoking that necessarily causes arson, but smoking anywhere in any park at any time has been now declared a crime. These take up the major amount of infraction citations, which is the major amount of citations, period, given by police and rangers to folks who have a 115 Coral Street transient address. And so the city has created its own crimes.
115 Coral?
115 Coral is the address of the, what I call, the Homeless Lack of Services Center.
I see.
It's actually what they call the Homeless Services Center. It is it used to be an emergency shelter. Now it is a place where if you can come in with a so-called pathway to housing, a government check of some kind, vouchers, they can put you up briefly while supposedly, and in some respects I'm sure they're sincere, looking for housing. But of course that leaves 95% of people outside facing criminalization in Santa Cruz. And
is this the same in other cities? I mean, other cities have rules, too, I assume, that would make you a criminal.
It depends, but, you know, Santa Cruz kind of has led the flock in this, in terms of the sleeping ban. Our sleeping ban, or I should say their sleeping ban, I had nothing to do with it, was created in 1978. It was a combination of a couple of laws. But you're right, there are other cities where, many other cities where this is, in fact, there are similar ordinances, although some other cities have acknowledged the right to sleep at night, that you cannot deny it, particularly if you have no shelter at all that will meet, you know, the typical homeless person seeking to find a place to sleep or rest or even be visible during the day.
Well, there's no problem with visibility of homeless folks around here.
Well, if you're homeless, there is. You'll find yourself, not necessarily, but there's a great likelihood, at least from the people that I've talked to, you'll be the subject of a complaint by some neighbor who feels that the public sidewalks are their domain, that the area of the sidewalk in front of their house is somehow their private property, and they have the right to remove everyone they don't like the look of. It has nothing to do with criminal behavior. It has to do with appearance. It has to do with aesthetics. It has to do with essentially paranoia, I think, to use, you know, perhaps a dramatic term, but not necessarily that far from the truth. So,
well, now, for instance, you say sidewalk. I was coming down, and I think I was on Coral Street, and headed towards the gas station near the park.
Right.
And there was about a half a block where there were people, and it was hot today.
Oh, yeah.
Or yesterday. And they were sitting in the shade on the street, but obviously some had set up permanent camp there.
Right.
You know, the beds were made and the tent was set up.
Right.
Now, they're doing this on the sidewalk.
Right.
And nobody can walk on it. So I know that that's no big deal. You can walk around people.
Right. No, I hear what you're saying. And you, they're obstructing the sidewalk.
Yeah.
But the reality is that this condition developed because the city chose to spend its money on enforcement actions against homeless people in the last 20 years, where enforcement meant you can't be, you get a ticket for sleeping after 11 o'clock at night, not on the sidewalk, but off in a park out of public view. They sent rangers and cops into the parks to clear the parks based upon, I don't know, demands or requests of groups like Take Back Santa Cruz, the Downtown Association. The police department itself has these sort of, I call them proto-fascist get-togethers with the neighbors to form vigilante groups. And I'm sure they do so with the best spirit. They believe they're helping law and order. They're protecting the neighborhood. They're keeping the children safe. But this is false. This false narrative creates an underclass of people or stigmatizes people. I think you see where I'm going with
Yeah.
this. My point is that you're right. There are nobody likes to be panhandled repeatedly, although I haven't noticed a lot of panhandling for me, but maybe it's because I don't look like I've got a lot of money.
Right.
You know,
you have your disguise.
Yeah, well disguised. But, in fact, if you go to Oakland or Berkeley or any large city now, you will see people in the hundreds in various encampments, usually 20, 25, 30, under the freeways, one after another. Have you been to Oakland or Berkeley lately?
Yeah. No, I haven't, but I've heard, and I've been to Salinas.
And the city has had to acknowledge it, just as Santa Cruz now, it can't pretend that it's not there. It doesn't mean they have a compassionate concern that suddenly developed because they got religion. It doesn't mean because they hired the new police chief from Eureka, Andy Mills, and he's got this wonderful, reasonable approach to suddenly recognizing homeless people as human beings. It's rather that as a practical person, Mills knows that if you squeeze them in one place, they're going to show up in another, because people will go to sleep at night even if you make it a crime, because it's a need. It's not a matter of choice, really.
Right. If you
of course,
don't
you could take
sleep.
Meth all night, I suppose.
But you would, sooner or later, it would knock you down.
Maybe the final sleep. Yeah.
Yeah, the big sleep.
Yeah.
Well, and when they go clear the parks or they clear any area, well, people just go to another area. I mean, you can't disappear. Oh, okay, I'm disappearing. You won't see me anymore. But that doesn't happen.
And in order, however, to discourage homeless people and to make it, quote, oh, I don't know, less inviting, as people like former Mayor Robinson and former Mayor Bryant and current council member and former Mayor Matthews like to put it, because they're sort of, to me, the emblematic of this anti-homeless attitude. They've created new laws that are extra constitutional. So, for example, I handed you a flyer about stay-away orders.
Stay away from Santa Cruz, yeah.
Right. There's since 2013, an increasingly intensified ordinance has been, it was created that said if you get a ticket for anything in any park or any area controlled by a ranger, which includes now Pacific Avenue, large swaths of Santa Cruz, and can be extended based upon solely upon the word of the city manager, Martine Bernal, who is the real powerhouse in our city. And if you get an infraction, they don't have to convict you of anything. They don't have to prove you're guilty. They can immediately give you a three-day stay away from that area for, let's say, doing something as simple as falling asleep at night. They can't say you can't do this particular crime here because you've been convicted of it, because you haven't. But they will say you can't come back here, and if you do, you go to jail for a year. This is prior to any court process. And this is a law that was began in 2013 as a one-day stay away. It became increased in the next year or the year after to mean if you do it, if you get another citation within a week, They can make you stay away for a month. If you get another citation within a month, and it doesn't have to be for the same thing, it can be any infraction in any park, anywhere in the city, or anywhere where they control. Now, it has to be said, honestly speaking, I've asked for the records and had some trouble getting them, but they're waiting at the police station, the Parks and Rec Department, City Hall, actually, to look over the citations to see how long the longer stay-away orders are for, because this is all done without benefit of any kind of judge's order and without benefit of being found guilty of any crime.
Well, I don't quite understand that.
I don't either. I mean, I do, but I don't like it.
I mean, I don't understand the logic behind it. So you've now said, okay, you can't be here for 3 days, so they go over here for 3 days, and nothing has been solved.
If they make it miserable enough, I again think the theory is people will not... Somehow there's this fantasy that Santa Cruz is this wonderful paradise for poor and homeless people with massive services and all kinds of luxury accommodations. And what we need to do is make people think that this is really not so nice a place, and the way to do that is to have people harassed at night for sleeping or anything else, you know, just being in a park after 6:01. It's actually illegal to be at City Hall with a political sign after 6 o'clock at night, even if you're just standing there, if you're doing nothing else.
So that was an encampment for a while, but is that still there? Tuesday nights or one night a week?
There was a thing called the Freedom Sleepers every Tuesday night.
Yeah.
And then there was, eventually, when they closed down the winter shelter in March of last year or April, a group called the Survival Sleepers simply moved to City Hall and said, we don't know where to go. We want to be in a relatively safer area. We're going to go here. And this, of course, enraged the city staff that felt that their pristine scene there was being, it was a disgraceful shame to have these homeless people cluttering up the area. And, you know, I can understand that aesthetic concern, but if you can contrast that with the homeless need to sleep, these are mostly disabled elderly people.
Mm-hmm. And disabled servicemen, too.
Yeah, I don't like the idea of calling armed killers of the U.S. my heroes, but they are victims of, you know, U.S. government policy as well. They're also, but to glorify them, I don't like doing that. But yes, they're servicemen. They've had, you know, they
put in their time. Whether you like what they did or not, they have put in their time.
Well, yeah.
Should we take a call here?
If you'd like.
Yeah, would you put on your headphones?
I will.
Okay. Hi, you're on the air with Robert Norris, and you are listening to KZSC Santa Cruz at UCSC. Go ahead. Oh, I know what I did. I did that.
That's Bart from San Lorenzo Park. Can you hear me?
Now we can hear you.
Yeah, start over. I had you on the wrong.
Okay. I live not far from San Lorenzo Park, and I love the river, and I ride around the river all the time after 40 years. The other day, I don't know if you guys mentioned this. I didn't listen to the whole show, but the flatlands there at San Lorenzo Park now has become a
homeless
encampment. Sort of a legal place for people to pitch their tents and live. And I noticed it, and I thought, wow, it's kind of interesting.
You know, let me interrupt you for just a second. I had the same experience about 2 weeks ago. I didn't know it was there, and I was walking along the bank for the first time in months. And it seemed like a really good place. And that I just wanted to put that in.
Yes, except for, of course, when the rains come, they'll have to leave and go somewhere, which kind of saddens me. But maybe that this is a beginning of a shift of thought. And I saw, just for the fun of it, went to over to the ranger, and I said, I've noticed you're letting these people be here, and it's kind of cool. And he said that, the police chief just, you know, they're just tired of moving people around and spending so much time, you know, harassing people. They really want to find a central place for them. And then, everybody is struggling and suffering with this. And, of course, the homeless people the most. But there is a shift in thought. Something's changing, I feel. And hopefully there'll be more permanent places for people that can keep it together to have campsites like that. It's very cool. So I'll just say that.
You could be right, caller. I'm wondering if this is a temporary measure that Mills... Yeah, I'm wondering, John, if this is a temporary measure where the police chief has adopted this to get the people away from the post office, where there was a lot of complaints by the people across the street who live in the condos and pay for them, and how can they have to look out the window, the shame of it all, and see these people there.
Was that really that can't be the whole group of them.
Well, what I was told by those who witnessed move-out activity that happened a week ago Friday, and I wasn't there and I don't know how close this person was, but he was a homeless person who was across the street. He said what he heard and what Food Not Bombs activists who feed there twice a week on Saturday and Sunday said is that Andy Mills came down, he kind of chatted, he's the police chief, with him in a friendly way, but he said, you're going to have to move at the beginning of the month I don't know if he suggested San Lorenzo Park or if it was sort of intimated. And indeed, I asked him about this. I've interviewed him for my radio show, which I do Thursday nights 6 to 8 and Sunday mornings 9:30 to 2 in the afternoon on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
And which era was that on the dial?
It's at 101.3 FM or freakradio.org if you're out of Santa Cruz. And we talk about this topic endlessly. And if you're interested in pursuing it, you might want to tune in there, too. And I appreciate you doing this, by the way, John. I think it's, you know, important.
Well, you know, we had a fundraiser for you guys. We think that's an important radio station in our community. And because it brings up yet another, gives a voice to a lot of people who would never get a voice.
Incidentally, we're looking for studio space 10 by 10, which we're going to rent. And we're offering a $500 reward.
Yeah.
If anyone has information that can give us access to it for a year. We need access to internet, telephone, and bathroom, but we don't need much else. We can even be in a shack outdoors and do it. So give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's the number of the group I work with. And also, I'm on the collective at Free Radio, and I'll pass that on to the masters of the air.
Okay.
You could even become a broadcaster, John, if you'd
Gee,
want.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I need your night job. All I need is another radio station to work at.
We will welcome you.
Okay. Well, thank you. Finish on out there about we were talking about the Flatlands Park, and he came over and talked with him, the new chief of police. He's got nothing but bad editorial letters telling the police have to enforce every law. They can't just pick the ones they want to enforce. What's wrong with the new police chief picking and choosing different laws that he wants to enforce? How do you react to that? Is that take
well? I think
Santa
it's a mixed. It's a mixed thing. I mean, if you read the Sentinel, you get recently you're getting responses like the last caller, who said, "Doesn't sound like a bad idea." You know, it certainly helps the police in terms of management, insofar as they manage anything, and it also provides a potential sense of community for the people. I don't know, though, that the homeless people are allowed to be there during the day for any permanent encampment. You might say, well, if they can go there and sleep at night, what's the difference? And the answer is half the problem for a person who's homeless is where do you keep your stuff during the day? You have to carry it all over with you, and there's the endless cycle of it's getting stolen or, in some cases, confiscated by Parks and Rec Rangers because, I don't know, you're suddenly having a drink of beer. You're not drunk. You're not crazy. You're just doing what any adult does in the privacy of your home or in a bar, but you can't do it because you're homeless.
Yeah, that's true. Let's take a call. I'd always like to let the listeners come in and join us. You're on the air with Robert Moe.
Yeah, I'm just calling back. They actually, amazingly, are letting them be there all day.
That's good news. I go all the time, day and night, and
they are there all day, a lot of stuff. I'm kind of surprised and pleasantly surprised. So,
well, you know, thank you. Thank you for that input.
And I actually saw the ranger treating somebody who is staying there with really, real, real respect. I mean, incredibly. The guy had offered to help with somebody that maybe was having some problems there and maybe disrupting things, and he was letting him know, and he thanked this person, and thank you, sir, to the homeless person, human being.
Yeah.
So, sort of impressive, and I think the police, the rangers, they're individuals, they're human beings, they have a really hard job. So, just thought I'd put that out there.
All right, thanks again. 459-4036, he makes a good point. The guys that are told, the street police that are said, okay, you have to go over and clean up this mess for us, that's a terrible job. I'm sure all of them aren't of that philosophy. I mean, I'm sure some of them are, too. But there's a lot of guys who work for the police or the rangers who are sympathetic to the situation.
Well, I think you have a much more sympathetic view of police and rangers than I do, not because the individuals are bad people, but the nature of the institution they work for gives them, first of all, a perch of power that it's easy to start exercising, and secondly, they're told to do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, they it's not, in a way, it's not their fault, but in another, You know, there's no Nuremberg defense for this kind of stuff. You're going to abuse someone and deprive them of their human rights, which people are suffering regularly in Santa Cruz. Although I'm glad to hear it seems to be happening less in San Lorenzo Park, and I wonder, once the Winter Armory shelter opens, which opens for the Association of Faith Communities will be doing for 100, 120 people starting either in early November or mid-November, this is going to be the pretext for running people out of the San Lorenzo
Park.
But
there's only 120. We have a lot
more than
120.
That's right.
Homeless
that's
folks.
For sure. But that's never bothered authorities in the past. If it bothers them now, good.
Well, yeah. I mean, at some point, you're going to find people in with authority that really understand that you can't just keep shuffling people around. That doesn't do anybody any good. You move them from one neighborhood to another neighborhood, and you haven't accomplished anything. But if, given the right to do and the money to do, how would you solve this problem? You've been thinking about this for much longer than most of us and working on it. You know, you've been active in this for as long as I've been aware of you, and that's 30 years.
It's been around for a while.
Yeah.
You know, the question has been asked, I think, of a lot of people, myself included, and, you know, I don't really pose that question to myself. My question is, how do you respect the rights and deal with the survival of people who are currently outside? And, you know, I mean, the answer you'll hear from many people, and it's not a bad answer, is housing. You know, you got to have housing. But the problem is, in a capitalist system like we have, you're not getting, particularly in Santa Cruz.
Right.
They're not going to build housing for poor people here. And even in cities where they supposedly are more enlightened or something, it doesn't happen without a radical transformation of society. But what you do in the meantime is you encourage people to stand up for their rights. You encourage people to say, I know you may not like the way I look, but I've got to sleep here tonight. Leave me the fuck alone. Forgive me for my French.
Now, wait a minute. Taking up 3 minutes of time.
Sorry about that.
Non-commercial educational radio station, KZSC, supports free expressions of ideas. Please be aware that the opinions expressed are those of the speaker or artists only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the UC Regents, KZSC staff, management, or underwriters. We welcome your feedback on our programming. Please direct your comments to the Program Review Committee at 831-459-4726 or by email at prc@kzsc.org. And the problem, that I don't have a problem with the word, but the FCC does. And the fines are up in the hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Have you ever been fined for that on this station?
No, because we read that.
Oh, but I mean, you know, I just said the F word.
Yeah.
So, you know, is that...
It's not our rule.
It must have happened beforehand.
Oh, it's happened all the time. People call up and want to just say that on the air because they think it's cool. And it isn't. It could cost this station.
Well, I think it's natural. I don't think it's necessarily cool. I think it's an expression of...
It is, but simple. As you know, you can look behind you up above and you'll see the sign that says a few of the words you can't say. Most of them have to do with...
George Carlin's seven deadly words.
Yeah. And there's one of them that I just don't understand why it's on that list. Let's take this call. Hi, you're on the air with Robert Norris. Hello?
Hello.
You're on the air.
Hi. Hey, didn't get any warning there. Hey, you know, I've been in the area a couple of years, and I find myself living in my truck, and I'm extremely blessed just to have that. And I listen to all the stuff going on about homelessness. And, you know, if I ever get wealthy enough, I was thinking, why don't you just get a place, like a low-rent place for people to live, really cheap, but have them work a little bit for it. And maybe give them, you know, a 50% double for working, you know, something harder or something like that. Something with incentive. And the crazy ones, you know, that really belong in institutions, really we just got to get them back there and take care of them. Like,
well, there aren't any, thanks to President Reagan or Governor Reagan at the time.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
Well, I think the ones that belong in institutions are the politicians running the country. That's the ones that belong in institutions.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, people. It's annoying or maybe a little bizarre to find people talking to themselves, though there's a lot of people on their cell phones, you know, these days.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, the problem with what you suggest, although, you know, it is, we actually, 30 years ago, when John and I first did a show or two, I think you had Jane Immler and myself and others in the studio, we were trying to expand shelter programs, but shelters are miserable places.
Oh.
They aren't, you know, they treat you like cattle. They're breeding places for illness. They don't have any accommodations for disabled people. They're essentially a way of warehousing people and getting people and pleasing the merchants and getting them off the street, out of the downtown area because of their alleged anti-business impact on shopping.
Yeah.
And the idea of making people work, I am not a fan of the work ethic, though I recognize that that's, you know, that often becomes a sort of an important thing you have to say in addition to say, well, you know, we'll make, if you only have to make them work, then that'll be better for them and so forth. And certainly, I think most people want to achieve something and they want to be a part of something and they also want to get fairly paid for it. You know, good luck with that in this society. It's as you probably have experienced yourself. I mean, I don't know whether you have or not, you know. But,
just a step in the right direction. There's a lot of people that would be willing to work for, you know, $10 an hour, you know, just to even make chump change. It's got to be better than nothing.
Chump change is not $10. That's what they pay us an hour to be broadcasters in this community. I mean, I swear, that's true. $11 an hour is what a professional broadcaster can expect to make in this
community. Dental benefits, Brad?
No. Because you don't work 40 hours a week. You work 5 hours or 4 hours a day.
Well, management has to have its vacations.
Yeah.
Come on.
Anyway, I was going to suggest Fort Ord. They have all of these barracks. They have all of these buildings down there. It would be a perfect place for a homeless community. But they don't want to do that, I don't think.
Well, yeah, I was arrested 20 years ago for a similar protest to open up a similar series of barracks in San Francisco. I think it was called Wary Housing. I may have the name wrong, and you know, we couldn't get them to do it. The homeless people just are not a very strong constituency for politicians at the current time. You know, it's I guess some would say until conditions get worse and people decide they need to get together and actually do something with each other to make the demands more audible to those in power, and then of course you have the problem of, you know, competing fascist type movements, which can also generate in those times. So I don't know. I just know that what I work on myself is trying to expose indifference, abuse by authorities and institutions that poor people come into contact with, and it's sort of an educational process, and it really leads to activists who are more vigorous and more motivated and with better connections to take the actions that might change things. Like you, John. You're a sprightly young fellow.
Yeah. I should be out there.
Or you, caller. Who knows? I still got the caller on the line.
Yeah, you're still there, aren't you, caller?
Yes, I am.
Okay, anything else?
I was just listening, and the problems are, it's just like it's a spider web. No matter where you go to fix it, another hole pops up somewhere. You know, I think, like you said, it just has to be a general thing. The more people that pray and say, enough is enough, it's going to change today, and do their little part to make a change today, then today will be the day it changes. And that's throughout the whole world for all evil stuff. You know, that's all our part, okay?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think I would encourage people to get in touch with Food Not Bombs on Friday, on Saturday or Sunday. They're down in front of the post office from 4 to 6, or look for the Facebook page, Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs. You can also contact my group, which is really kind of minuscule. It's called HUFF, and you call 423-HUFF, and you can help us pour through public records and expose abuses, which is what I'm primarily trying to do these days.
And you can also call us at 459-4036. We got another 10 minutes or so with Robert. And so let's take this call. You're on the air with Robert Norris. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, you're on the air.
Hey, this is, well, you know me. I'm Eric Green Party. I wanted to comment on the Fort Ord barracks and why they aren't being used.
Go for it.
It's a combination of asbestos and lead.
Gotcha.
Even in the barracks, like the eight-story... There was a eight-story, they called it the new barracks back in the 60s, but they're still there. It's a big, tall building right in the middle, and I I don't know where any of those things would come from there. There's lead out in the firing ranges, and I don't know about the asbestos.
Yeah, there's asbestos in the barracks, and there's lead in the barracks, lead paint, and all sorts of fun stuff like that. And the Army didn't care about that stuff when they put soldiers in them anyway.
Nope, they didn't. I was one of them.
I mean, I sure remember the barracks I was in, how many times it got painted, and not at Fort Ord, but that's got to be, anyway. But that's one of the reasons. And besides, they're not near any services. There's some veteran stuff not too far from some of the barracks at Fort Ord, but that's veteran stuff. That's not everybody.
Well, but they could put in all of that, you know?
Oh, yeah, if they want to.
Well, instead of spending our money trying to police it, let's take that money and find a place that would at least a community could be started, and they could have places to eat, places to sleep, places to go to the bathroom. That's the thing that I think would be one of the worst parts, is trying to find a place to go to the bathroom without getting arrested.
The poo-poo factor.
Yeah,
in
exactly.
Salinas, the homeless got together and rented a porta potty, and the city put a fence around it a few years ago. What the key to the whole thing? Salt Lake City's reduced their homeless population from 3,000 to 400. And one of the reasons is they cared. Another reason is they housed them first and then dealt with the other issues. And it's possible to do it. Of course, they had $20 million in Mormon money. That really helped. But there's a lot of money floating around in our government. We all know that. And let's not get into the stupid wars. But communities who really want to deal with it are dealing with it. And it's not like it's impossible. It's like you just got to get the right people in office. And here in Salinas, we certainly don't. And that's one of our problems.
And?
Well, interesting you mentioned Salinas. Activist Wes White is working over there. You may have been aware of the encampment that was at their city hall. For 6 months, they actually had a nighttime encampment that was gone during the day because it was ironically legal to be there at night but illegal to be there during the day. In Santa Cruz, it's legal to be at City Hall during the day but not after hours, even if you're sitting there, you know, with a petition to the government. That's now illegal.
Well, you know, something about the encampment at City Hall, I was there a lot, not overnight, but I had friends there. And I was friends with Jose Castaneda, the former city council member who's now in jail.
Yeah.
But what they would do is they were really strict on following the rules because they had to be out of there at 6, and they were out of there at 6. Didn't have a place to go, but they were out of there. They played by the Salinas rules. And Jose was arranging for food with various churches. And it was a nice little community. There was a mother with three daughters.
I remember. I went over there myself and I saw it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course,
it worked really well for a while. But the city of Salinas basically has a war against the homeless.
Yeah.
And Monterey County doesn't. If Monterey County cared, something would get done.
Well, also, you find this against people in RVs who are trying to. They're one step up. Their home is their RV or their vehicle. In Santa Cruz, the city council tried to ban RVs parking at night everywhere in the city unless you're connected to a business or a residence. And I was able, through suggestions from a city council member, to get the Coastal Commission to veto this idea because it denies everyone access to the coast. And I'm hoping that in Monterey, the people on Lapis Road who are fighting to be able to live in their vehicles, and they've gotten a small stay of execution from the county, will do something similar. They'll go to the Coastal Commission and say, they're posting signs that say you can't park here, you know, during the day. Take
the
those signs
on
down.
On Lapis Road is their porta potties out there, provided by the county, but they've also pretty well dispersed. They, meaning the folks who were living there, and they were cleaning up the area.
That's
they
what
were
I heard.
Leaving it cleaner than they found it. But what the county has succeeded in so far, I wouldn't call it a stay of execution, but they pretty well dispersed. Years ago, I lived in my car for a year, and I found the best, and sure, it was a lot more subtle than an RV, but what I found is if I was just careful where I parked, nobody hassled me, and I got away with living in my car for a year, and had permission from some landowners to park on their property and stuff, but it's doable. But the biggest problem we have in Monterey County is simply that the people in power don't care. And they don't care. Who knows? They don't care. We have one of our city council members saying and he's one of the most, the newest city council members. He's been in office less than a year. He basically said, well, I've done enough. I'm not doing any more. And we've got another one who complains about the money spent on the homeless, which ironically is mostly in cleanups and legal fees. And the thing is, we take that money, redirect that to putting them in very basic homes and find a place to do it. And you've got the land to do it. It's available.
No, I think you're right. But I think what we need are coalitions of groups that have happened in other eras, you know, renters, elderly, disabled, minorities, who can come together and actually have some force. So, for example, yeah, yesterday at Santa Cruz, there was a rental protest gathering at City Hall. They were doing their nice, the City Council was doing its froofy affordable housing fifth study session of the year. They're studying away, but they're doing nothing about rent control. But outside, and I wasn't there, unfortunately, he kept me away, there were people who were mobilizing for real rent control through, I think they're going to use an initiative, but it's also possible something like rent strikes and direct protests against landlords. If people who are renting can understand that the criminalization of people outside is part of the whole process of making people accept crappy, and I think that word is acceptable.
Yes, that's okay.
Ridiculous. Effing ridiculous, man. And that, so it, once people can get together and start finding that they, even if they aren't homeless, and a very small percentage of Santa Cruz is homeless, but they are at risk of homelessness, and they're forced to take all kinds of work that they can't, you know, that doesn't really pay them what they need to do because of the fear of how they'll be treated if they're homeless.
Well, thanks, caller. We appreciate your call. And Robert, I appreciate you coming in. Give that information on where people can listen to you on Pirate Radio.
Yes, Free Radio Santa Cruz. It's at 101.3 FM. We're a 24-hour station. You can actually become a part of the collective if you want. You've got to pay a small amount of money each month for rent. But and we're also looking for a studio. Give me a call if you want more information about it. Call me at 423-HUFF. That's HUFF, which is an acronym for the organization I work with, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. You can also join Food Not Bombs, or just come on down between 4 and 6 on Saturday and Sunday at the main post office and just take a look, sample the food, and look at the community there and see what you think.
All right, Robert. Well, you weren't as annoying as I was hoping.
No, I'm sorry.
You're
going
down.
You, but you might be kicked off the air.
Yeah, you don't want to do that yet. So do that. If you need more information, that's another great source of it. I've always called it Pirate Radio because that's what it used to be called, but now it's Radio Free Santa Cruz, and we love it, and we support it here at KZSC. So thanks to Robert for being here today.
Thanks, John.
Dressed in red, you in military green. If you had met her in Jerusalem, you might have asked her on a date. But here you were in Gaza, rolling towards the gate. As your foot went to the floor, did you recall her eyes? Did her gaze remind you that you've become what you despise? As you rolled on towards this woman and ignored all shouts to stop, did you feel a shred of doubt as you watched her body drop? As your caterpillar tracks upon her body pressed with 60 tons of deadly force, crushed the bones within her chest, could you feel the contours of her face as you took her life away? Did you serve your country well on that cool spring day? Thank you. to the open shore. Was this just another day in a dirty war? When you looked out on the water, did you feel an empty void? Or was it just one more life you've taken, one more home destroyed? One more home destroyed.
And that was a song by David Rovics about Rachel Corey. He describes it this way: in March 2003, just before the U.S. would launch its latest invasion of Iraq, International Solidarity Movement volunteer Rachel Corey was killed by an Israeli soldier driving an armored bulldozer. She was from Olympia, Washington, where you'll find a large mural in her memory in the center of town. People like Rachel losing their lives affects different people in different, often profound ways. Of course, for people who knew her, losing a friend or daughter so young is devastating. But people losing their lives while practicing this kind of solidarity, sitting in front of an armored bulldozer, is deeply moving to those on behalf she was attempting to intervene, as well as to those back home who identify themselves as part of the social movement background that the person came from. For those who had just done something along the lines of what Rachel was doing, or were just making plans to do something similar, for example. And name of the song, The Death of Rachel Corey. That happened back in 2003. And in case I didn't mention it, the International Solidarity Movement that she was a part of was a network of people mainly involved with solidarity with Palestinians. They'd been gaining more attention since it formed after the outbreak of the Second Intifada. ISM volunteers were regularly putting their lives on the line to try to stop homes from being demolished or children from being shot by soldiers. And here's a story from the Mercury News of December 18th. Calls for Gaza ceasefire. Protesters try new tactics at council meetings. Berkeley Mayor Araguin attempts to keep tight grip on public comments during the session. And, of course, Mayor Fred Keeley, Fastlane Fred, as I've called him, in Santa Cruz, gave a lot more leeway to people to protest. But, of course, they did nothing. And, of course, he perhaps, I don't know if he was thinking this, but his objective was to have people just treated as another public opinion session. That's what it was, because as far as I know, nothing further was announced since that Santa Cruz December 12th protest that filled the council chambers and took 3.5 hours at the council mic. But here's what happened in Berkeley, according to Katie Lauer of the Mercury News. All 9 chairs reserved for the Berkeley City Council were yet again vacated earlier than expected Tuesday night when the biweekly meeting was forcibly adjourned only 96 minutes after it started. It became a regular occurrence since council members abruptly walked out of their November 14th meeting only 20 minutes after protesters, pressing them to call for a ceasefire in Gaza, disrupted the agenda's proceedings. This past week, Mayor Jesse Arguin attempted to keep a tight grip on public comments during the council's final meeting of 2023, directing the city clerk to draw only 10 speaker cards from people physically at the meeting and call the first 10 raised hands on Zoom. But organizers who want the council to act on Gaza have quickly adapted their toolbox of tactics to get their comments in. After 3 different ceasefire resolutions, each drafted by Berkeley Council members Rigel Robinson, Terry Taplin, and Ben Bartlett, were abandoned in the days before Tuesday's meeting, organizers said they realized the city leaders weren't going to willingly carve out any time for a conversation on the subject. Araguin also asked his colleagues to suspend the council's rules
and cap public comments for items on the city's consent calendar, which is typically passed without dissension, to 45 minutes. So the small number of people selected Tuesday night to talk about issues on the consent calendar found ways to creatively bring up Gaza, all while technically abiding by the rules of decorum. On the topic of affirming the right to reproductive freedom in Berkeley, one speaker voiced concerns about mothers giving birth in Gaza without access to safe, clean medical care and lacking enough food to adequately breastfeed. Regarding a $250,000 city contract for on-call roofing and gutter repairs, another said that Israeli bombardment has destroyed scores of roofs in Gaza, which will need to be reconstructed. Speaking on the reappointment of an infectious disease immunologist to the Alameda County Mosquito Abatement District Board of Trustees, one woman said that the terms of the sitting Berkeley City Council should end because they are not listening to what their constituents are saying. I've realized that this is not a matter of humanitarian crisis for my representatives. Rather, it is a circus, she said. You all reserve the right to not pass this resolution. But if you don't even call for a special meeting, that just makes it clear that you're not doing your job. And of course, in Santa Cruz, we made the same call, and we were similarly ignored. Power tends to do that unless you present equal power in response. Shortly after 7:30 p.m., Arguin quickly bumped two of the three remaining issues on the agenda to consent, continued the third to a future date, and adjourned Tuesday's meeting. But the boardroom remained packed near its 240-person capacity as demonstrators continued chanting to their no longer present elected representatives. Armed with signs, flags, and shoes symbolizing the estimated 18,000 Palestinians, of course now it's like 22,000, I think, in the first 2 months of the war, dozens of others who could not fit inside the 1231 Addison Street boardroom remained huddled together outside. Organizers broadcast the Zoom meeting and other announcements using a small loudspeaker, hosting their own makeshift town hall, despite being corralled by Berkeley police on the opposite side of a gate around the boardroom. One organizer, who only identified themselves as Christina, said that they want their community, that their community wants the Berkeley City Council to be on the right side of history. But if local leaders, as well as state and federal reps, remain unresponsive to the hundreds of emails, signatures, and people attending, she said, demonstrators will continue to protest. They won't let us have the conversation, so we're pointing out the contradictions, Christina said. The people here are fighting for the soul of Berkeley. That's protesters try new tactics at council meetings. Berkeley Mayor Arguin attempts to keep tight grip on public comments during the session. December 18, 2023, Mercury News by Katie Lauer. And coming up next is the flashback to the 2016 February 28th show. First, you're going to hear Mike Rhodes' interview. He's recently written a book called Dispatches from the War Zone. He talks about police brutality, and it's all about Fresno. But the reason Fresno is important is because they successfully got a lawsuit enjoining stopping, supposedly, the police from going after homeless people until they could find adequate shelter, at least, and also insisting they not destroy their property, but that they store it. Also, to be heard is Pushback Pat Colby, who talks about the right to recycle, talks about her involvement with the group The Freedom Sleepers, which at that time was going on their 33rd week. Every Tuesday they slept outside city council in protest against the city's anti-homeless sleeping ban. And at that point, the mayor of Santa Cruz, then Don Lane, who I've called Gone Lame, was being pressed to actually put an item on the agenda, which, to his credit, I suppose, he did, although he wouldn't include it with it the right to cover up with blankets, but only the right to simply fall asleep without bedding. And that one didn't pass the council muster anyway, and very little was heard from him afterward, though he tends to make lots of speeches about the importance of helping the homeless and creating affordable housing and things of that sort. But he tends to go along with the prevailing consensus, sort of like good old boys in the South went along with segregation for the Negroes, you know. Continuing, you'll hear Mike Boyd talking about the taxing of medical marijuana and the fight that he is doing in the courts to stop that. Then Keith McHenry talks about his own experiences trying to get this assistant city manager at that time, a man named Scott Collins, to understand and recognize and accept his evidence that there was not a lot of mess being made at the Tuesday night Freedom Sleepers events. But Collins kind of ducked, tried to get away from him and ducked out the back door. And also McHenry talks about his upcoming hearing in court. I think he pled or found guilty. I'm not sure. The city council decided to create these new boxes that people had to be inside of. Boxes, that is to say, demarcated areas on the sidewalk. You can now see them, and they're little discs, copper discs. But in those days, they were blue chalk marks. And so what Keith did is he went around with Abby Samuels, and they added more marks so that people could have more places to legally perform. And in fact, of course, the entire public sidewalk is legal to perform if you're not blocking under the Constitution. At least that's what a lot of us have felt. But that was ignored by the city council. Although these days the police still have pretty same nasty laws on the books. They just aren't enforcing them at the moment. And I suppose we should be glad about that, but I won't be happy until I see them gone. And then we have various stories about police abuse in different cities. Of course, against homeless encampments, shutting them down with 72-hour deadlines. Different shootings by police in different cities, covering up investigations or obstructing them, as was happening in San Francisco to the investigation to the killing of Mario Woods. Burns, Oregon, a man shot for reaching for his headband. Menlo Park, violent crime dropping down 30%. And I was looking to find out where what's the story here in Santa Cruz, because a big issue made, at least in the years immediately prior to 2016, was that there's a big crime element involved around homeless people. What's the proof? Well, they're violating, causing a lot of police problems by sleeping in the woods. You see, that's a crime, and therefore they're criminals, and therefore we have to deal with that menace. At least that's how it was put. Then there's going to be a further flashback to the spring of 1989. You'll hear an interview with both Backyard Brian Staley and Sly Shoes Sandy Loringer, the two Santa Cruzans who went to jail and had to, actually were convicted or pled to the city's attempt to repress food serving at the town clock, which continued nonetheless in those days. And then finally you'll hear an interview with council member Micah Posner. He will apologize for his rule-breaking around the granny unit issue, which actually was trying to be helpful to somebody to provide them a place to stay. But, of course, Santa Cruz maintains its gentrification approach. And I think there have been more liberal measures made on granny units. I haven't kept up with that. Probably should. Maybe I will kind of try to do an update on that at some point. But of course, since most homeless folks can't afford granny units either, the real issue is to let them sleep without harassment in the groups that they need to sleep in where they're at until such time as there is housing available and services available for them. And that's that. Now you get to hear the flashback.